So we're going to continue our series we started. Dave and I have been working on this this morning. We're going to our summer series on the Psalms. This basically is a series on poems. How many of you love studying poetry in school? Be honest. Show of hands. Yeah, not too many. Some did. I was a teacher for many, many years, I actually loved teaching a unit on poetry because I love kids' poetry. I love seeing how they will express themselves in their own unique ways, creating unique images. Here's some real metaphors from high school students. So they weren't my students. I was a middle school teacher for the most. Here's some metaphors from actual high school students. The little boat gently drifted across the pond exactly the way a bowling ball wouldn't. Good point. Another one. Even in his last years, Granddad had a mind like a steel trap, only one that had been left out in the rain too long. Or this one. The plan was simple, like my brother-in-law Phil. But unlike Phil, the plan just might work. And I could hear this one from a number of students possibly. Her vocabulary was as bad as, like, whatever. So, anyways, you got to love students. They express themselves in a great variety of ways, and it's awesome as a teacher to have seen. Those were humorous ones, but to see sometimes some amazing ways of looking at life, and it's a lot of fun. This psalm we're going to look at today is probably the best known of all the psalms, especially for its metaphor, and that metaphor is, the Lord is my shepherd. The Lord is my shepherd. And, you know, you've heard that many, many times, I'm sure, over the years. But we're going to look at it this morning, and hopefully I can add something to that well-known psalm to help you think about it a little bit deeper. Let's look at it together this morning. Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me on paths of righteousness for his name's sake. And even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Psalm 23. I'm sure most of you have heard that at least on a couple of occasions in your lives. Often used at funerals. Why is this psalm so enduring? St. Augustine chose it as the hymn of martyrs. Oliver Cromwell died with it on his lips. And I'm sure he's not the only person who had that experience. Black Panther Elridge Cleaver recited it during a moment of conversion. Kanye West used it in his rap, Jesus Walks. It was used in the movie Titanic. And I thought I'd share the scene just so you can be reminded of it. In the movie Titanic, where it says that you had the ship going down, and they have the quartet playing. And it says at one point, they passed the four members of the string quartet. This is DiCaprio and his girl there, and the string quartet, who moments earlier had been serenading passengers with classical sonatas, and now the musicians are reciting, "The Lord is my shepherd." Maybe you remember the scene. And when the foursome get to the phrase, "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death," Jack, that's DiCaprio, shoves past them, leading his beloved Rose by the hand, and he calls, "You want to move a little faster through that valley?" Right, that's out of that that movie as well. Psalm 23 gets all kinds of cultural references all the time. Maybe Psalm 23 crosses generations and continents and time because its metaphors and images transcend time and place. Despite their Near Eastern origin, despite the fact that few people actually know anything about shepherds or sheep, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. I remember memorizing that in about fifth grade. and being super confused by the phrase, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." What I'm memorizing is, "I don't want the Lord as my shepherd." That's what I'm memorizing. Made no sense to me. Eventually, I did come to understand what it meant, "I shall not want." It's from a Hebrew word, by the way, hasser, translated want. It's the same verb that's found in Deuteronomy 2, verse 7. Look at it with me, because I think that it helps to understand this word. Deuteronomy 2, Moses, "The Lord your God has blessed you in all the work of your hands. He has watched over your journey through this vast wilderness. These 40 years, people of Israel, the Lord your God has been with you." And then this, and here's that verb, that Hebrew verb that we get want out of, but here they say, "You have lacked nothing." And so that's another way of saying it. The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. Just like the Israelites in the wilderness. I lack nothing. Now, if you remember that story, they wouldn't have said that. Right? I mean, they life wasn't all that easy in the wilderness. My wife and I had the opportunity to go hang out in that neck of the woods with a trip with a bunch of pastors. And yeah, it's an inhospitable place to be. It's a tough place to be. And the Israel, if you read your Bible, you'll see them, they whine and they complain at that time. If you ask them, "Do you lack anything?" They say, yeah, there's a bunch of stuff we lack. But then we hear the stories of manna and water coming out of rocks. They lacked nothing they truly needed. Now, this is the tough sell. If I were to say this to you, "Do you lack anything?" And you would answer honestly, how many would say, "I lack nothing"? This is the tough sell for consumers of the West. "I lack nothing." Really? Come on. Have you seen the latest phone? Have you seen the latest computer? The latest car? Whatever? I lack that. Right? Our culture is built around you and I feeling dissatisfied. It's built on what I want. It's built on an awareness of what I don't have. It's not about focusing on what I have. It's about focusing on what I lack. You'll be happy when you get, and you can fill in the blank. So really, Psalm 23 is countercultural. We need to realize that our shepherd is the one who leads us. And he leads us where he chooses and circumstances we wouldn't always choose, but somehow he's there and we follow and he provides us what we need. And somehow we rest in that. I don't want to over sentimentalize this psalm because it's not to be over sentimentalized. Yes, the Lord does lead to green pastures, and he leads to still waters, and he leads the right path. And even through that dark valley, even that valley of death, which was an actual place, by the way, he leads us to those places. But take note, he leads in spite of enemies. He leads to those dark places, to those dark valleys. It's not all lush green pastures and still waters all the time. And I think most of us in our lives, if we look at our lives, we see we've been led to all kinds of places. And we don't always know why. And then this shepherd, he has his rod and his staff with him. He can drive away those enemies. These are formidable weapons if used rightly. But he can also keep sheep in line with that rod and that staff as well. And even when the enemies are around, what's God up to? God's setting up a table in the midst of the enemies so we can feast. He anoints us with oil. He pours wine till the cup overflows. There's an image there. In the midst of enemies, you're having a feast. What a picture. The psalmist enjoys the presence of Yahweh, of the Lord, in the middle of struggles, in the middle of danger, as well as in times of peace. This psalm comes right after Psalm 22, which is where the phrase when Jesus quotes it on the cross, my God, why have you forsaken me? And it's a psalm that is a very, very difficult time. You're supposed to read them in pairs, Psalm 22, Psalm 23. They come together, huge struggle, and then this. The Lord is my shepherd. And then surely goodness and mercy will follow. Will follow. The Hebrew word is radap. Will follow me all the days of my life. The Hebrew word follow, the radap, it's used elsewhere in the Bible. but it's often used in quite a different way. It's in quite a few places, but it usually is this. The word is actually used to pursue. And it's usually an enemy is pursuing you and overtaking you. That's the word radap. And so I put an example now. Psalm 143 uses that word. The enemy pursue me, he crushes me to the ground, he makes me dwell in darkness like those long dead. And David in Psalm 23 is using that same verb here, but he's using it with surely goodness and mercy will follow, will pursue me all the days of my life. This frightening image of being pursued by enemies is turned on its head. Instead of enemies pursuing me and overtaking me and making me feel like I'm in a dead place, he says, this goodness and mercy of God will pursue me all the days of my life. The bad news, we have enemies. The good news, God has our backs. Goodness and mercy, his goodness, his mercy, they're pursuing you all the day. They're chasing you. I like that word almost better than follow in the sense that they follow me, in the sense that because follow sounds a little bit less pushy. Pursue. Pursue after me. They're hunting me down. It reminds me of an image from a poem, a famous poem from Francis Thompson called The Hound of Heaven. And in the poem, God is pictured as a hound pursuing his people with his love. And it's a fascinating poem. And the poet, by the way, went through some tough times, went through some struggles with his own addictions. And one writer said this about the poem, the Hound of Heaven. He said, the name is strange. It startles one at first. It's so bold, so new, so fearless. It doesn't attract, rather the reverse. But when one reads the poem, this strangeness disappears, the Hound of Heaven. The meaning is understood as a hound follows a rabbit, never ceasing its run, ever drawing nearer in the chase, with unhurrying and imperturbed pace, so does God follow the fleeing soul by his divine grace. And though in sin or in human love, away from God, it seeks to hide itself, divine grace follows after, unwaringly, follows ever after, till the soul feels its pressure, forcing it to turn to him alone in that never-ending pursuit. And I find that comforting. You have a God who's saying to this person who's running totally the wrong way, I'm coming. I'm after you. Not in a horrible, scary way like a hound chasing a rabbit. No, I'm coming with my love. I'm coming with mercy. I'm coming with grace. I'm after you. You need me. Maybe you have people in your lives where you say, wow, I wish they'd surrender to that loving God, to his mercy and goodness. I wish they'd just stop running. Right? I don't have those people in my life. I wish they'd stop running. And you know what? In the meantime, I hope they sense that pursuit. I hope they feel in the back of the hair in the back of the neck stand up once in a while saying, I get the sense somebody's after me. Because somebody is. The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. During the exile, Israel got taken into captivity, their nation destroyed, they're in Babylon. And the great prophets of Israel during that time of exile began to understand God as the great shepherd who would lead his people back to the promised land. I put a sample of that down, Ezekiel 34. Here's what God reveals to the prophet Ezekiel. For this is what the sovereign Lord says, I myself will search for my sheep. I'll look after them. As a shepherd looks after his scattered flock, and they're scattered. They're in exile. They're all over the place. As their scattered flock, when he is with them, so will I look after my sheep. I will rescue them from the places where they were scattered on a day of clouds and darkness. We often think that shepherds, and it's true, they were culturally kind of low, and yet in the middle, ancient Near East, kings would speak of themselves as shepherds. And they'd speak of themselves as guiding and protecting their people. David, he's often called a shepherd king, because he was both. And he, even as king, is encouraged to follow his great shepherd. And when he's saying, "The Lord is my shepherd," he's actually asking you and I a question. Who are you following? Who's your shepherd? Are you following those kings, those leaders? Is your shepherd worth following? Is it leading you to the places you really need to go? Now, let me remove some more sentimentality from the psalm. You often see these pictures, right? You know, Jesus holding a lamb, and there's something beautiful about that. But when you are being called a sheep, it is not a compliment. It isn't. Sheep tend to be dumb. Look to the person next to you and say, "I'm a sheep." Come on, Trevor. Right, you know, we're sheep. But the people of Israel at that time would know right away being called a sheep wasn't necessarily a big positive statement. Many years ago, when I was a kid, I was a paperboy. You remember those guys who delivered papers, the Vancouver Sun, the Province, every day? You remember newspapers. And anyways, I lived in Ladner. My parents are still there. And part of my paper route was through some farm territory, so lots of biking. And one day, I was biking my paper route, and I noticed there was a sheep in a ditch, and it seemed stuck. And I tried to coax it out, but it wouldn't budge, and it was way too big and heavy for me. So I looked around for the farmer, and I couldn't find the farmer at the time. So I biked home, and I got my dad to help me, because I thought, we can't leave the sheep there. It was getting a little toward dark. And anyway, so my dad came back to me, and then the farmer in the meantime showed up. And we worked our tails end off trying to get that sheep, and it was, you know, halfway in the ditch water, and it would not back up. And now the wool, in the meantime, acted like a sponge, so it was just like sucking up ditch water. And trying to get that thing out, and that farmer, whose language was, along with my dad, was fairly colorful, I learned some new words that day. You know, we worked and worked and worked, and finally we got that thing out. But that farmer kept referring to that thing as those dumb, dumb sheep, and then a bunch of other words as well. Here's the point. Sheep, they're dumb. They need watching. They need to have someone look out for them. They need to be led, to be protected, in order to keep them on the right paths for their own good, to help them live. I'm a sheep. So are you. We could kind of have kind of like an AA moment here. Hi, I'm Sid, I'm a sheep. And you could kind of, you could do the same thing. Hey, yeah, me too, I'm a sheep too. Here's how Isaiah says it, Isaiah 53. And he says it bluntly. We all, notice all, we all, like sheep, have gone astray. Each of us has turned to our own way, and the Lord has laid on him, on Jesus, the iniquity, the brokenness, the sin of us all, the stupidity of us all. We all, like sheep, tend to go where we think we ought to go, or don't think very much. Left to my own devices, I wouldn't live well. I'll end up stuck in a ditch. I need a shepherd to show me the right way. And yeah, to yank me out of the ditches I find myself in. Because I unfortunately visit those places now and then. To lead me to the right paths. To lead me to the right paths. When my wife and I went with a group of pastors and we went to Egypt and Israel and Jordan, you know, we saw lots of flocks. Let me show you a few slides, because we have images in our minds, and those images were changed for me on that trip. Look at this first slide. There we are. There's the sheep. We are the sheep. And this sheep, by the way, is grazing in fairly lush land. Look at the next slide. This is the land that David's talking about. This is not knee-deep in alfalfa. You know, this is little pockets of grass here, little pockets of grass there, little pockets of grass there. And these sheep, they wander from little mouthful to little mouthful to little mouthful. And the shepherd needs to keep them moving, because if he lets them stay too long, they'll uproot the grass, and you can see there isn't an abundance of it. And so, you know, he keeps them moving, so they grab a mouthful, and then they keep moving so they don't uproot the grass so it'll grow again so they can eat again at some other point here. And sheep need a flock. They're wired to be in a flock. But they're dumb. And they can wander. Look at this next slide. Right? I don't know what you picture when you think of, you know, follow the shepherd. But if you were picturing lockstep, single file, they're following more or less. I mean, it's one of the reasons why you need sheepdog too, because they don't follow as well as we might wish. You know, we think we're following sometime. And now this idea of the right path. Look at this next slide. All of those are paths. It's not one path that all the sheep go on. And those are straight paths. Well, you might say, come on, so they're not particularly straight. No, they go all over the place. So when David is describing it, I wonder what we picture. One, it's a tough land. It's not the hills of Scotland. Right? Not lush and green like that. It's pretty tough territory. And these sheep follow, but they wander, and they have their own paths. It's the right path, more or less. Right? You're on a path. I'm on a path. There's some individuality to our paths. But notice they're all more or less going in the same direction, because they are following the shepherd in the main. But there's some bumps and twists and turns, and, you know, I walk over here. Oh, there's some food. Oh, there's some food. Oh, there's some food. Oh, there's the wolf. You know, and this is kind of how it goes. We follow. But we make choices too. This isn't blind, stupid following. We're making choices. Not always good ones. And then the shepherd, interesting, because we do follow, but it also said in the one verse, when I go through the dark valley, you're there with me. And so we have a shepherd who not only is up ahead and we're following, but we also have a shepherd who's in the midst of us. He's with us, especially in those dark valleys. Maybe you got to camp overnight in a few of those places, those dark, dark places where you don't want to be, and you got to hang out there. And so the shepherd right in the middle of us, you know, when we hunker down for the night as a flock, and the shepherd's sleeping in the midst of us. He's in the midst of the trouble with us. And then this shepherd is not only leading, he's not only with us in the middle of it all, but he's following us. And then we read, surely goodness and mercy, his goodness, his mercy, are behind us. And so you get it, right? He's ahead. He's in the midst. He's behind. You're surrounded. You're surrounded. I think that's why St. Patrick could, you know, he's attributed to this. You know, Christ with me, Christ before me, Christ behind me, Christ in me. Christ beneath me, Christ above me, Christ on my right, Christ on my left, Christ when I lie down, Christ when I sit down, Christ when I rise. Right? He's with me. All around. And yeah, these sheep have a tendency to wander. That's why Isaiah said it. We all like sheep have gone astray. We all like sheep have gotten off the track that we should have been on. We read in Luke 15, look at it with me. Jesus, the shepherd, he writes, "Then Jesus told them this parable. Suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Doesn't he leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? And when he finds it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulders and goes home." Right? The sheep that's kind of gone the wrong way. So much so now that they're lost. They don't even know how to get back. And the shepherd comes after them. Isn't that something? Wouldn't that be, isn't that a beautiful picture of what the gospel is? Right? The shepherd became one of us. That's Christmas. That's Christmas. He became one of us. The shepherd then comes, and he comes to seek the lost. He answers their fear. He answers their territory, their anxiety, their struggle, their where they are, their dark place. He goes into that place, and he finds the lost, and he carries them back. He calls them by name. Look at John 10 with me, where Jesus said, "I am the good shepherd." And the good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. Really? The hired hand is not the shepherd, and he does not own the sheep. So when the wolf comes, he abandons the sheep and runs away, and then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he's a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep, but I'm the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and they know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, that same way, I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. And he's talking about Israel and then other nations here. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. And the reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life, only to take it up again because resurrection happens. My sheep listen to my voice. I know them. They follow me. I give them eternal life, and they shall never perish, and no one shall snatch them out of my hands. When is it in Israel, someone there shared the story of in the 1960s, the Israeli government decided to round up all the sheep from flocks where the owners had not paid a certain tax. So they collected them all, and a lot of these were poor Palestinians. And so they were rounded up thousands of sheep, and they had them all in a holding area. And one day, a young man, his mother sent him to get their family sheep. They'd paid the tax. And this kid comes, and he says, I come to get my sheep, this Palestinian kid. And the soldiers laugh. And they point to this massive pen of thousands of sheep, and they say, "There you go, good luck." And the kid goes to the pen, and he utters a certain sound. And out of these thousands of sheep, 20 of them start making their way through. And out they come. And the kid goes home with the sheep. The sheep knew his voice. And here's the gospel irony. The shepherd becomes the sacrificial lamb. The good shepherd suffers a violent death for the flock so they can know right paths again, so they can know green pastures again, so they can know still waters. I love this phrase in verse 4 where David writes, "I will fear no evil, for you are with me." And I want to ask you this. Can you imagine if we live with that truth deeply embedded in the reality of our lives? I will fear no evil. So many of us are driven so much by fear. Imagine if we as sheep knew ourselves pursued by God's goodness and mercy, surrounded by God's goodness, Psalm 23 raises my confidence in God. It helps me face the many fears that I have. He makes me, He leads me, He restores my soul, even in the dark valleys, even in those dead places. And I can even feast in the midst of troubles and enemies, because He sets a table up there for me, and He pours my cup to overflowing. We should be fearless sheep. Can you imagine that? Sheep are skittish by nature. We should be fearless sheep. Let me ask you this. Are you? Are you? Do you hear the shepherd's voice? So often, so many of us are busy protecting ourselves, trying to avoid that dark valley, trying to stay out of that place of death and trouble. But if we were fearless, we might even say, you know what? I'm really fascinated by the fact I'm going to go into that dark, dark valley, and I'm going just to see what the shepherd's going to do, because he's going to do something. I've said at many funerals, when I've used the psalm, it says, you know, that the, you know, we it's a valley of the shadow of death. And I've often pointed out, where there's shadows, guess what else is there? Light. Light. Scripture calls Jesus the light of the world. And that light shines in dark places. And you can rest easy. And all those fears you have, you can be a fearless sheep, because the shepherd is able. Yeah, I don't always like the places I find myself. Maybe you don't either. But the shepherd's there. And we can have great confidence. And then we can write, say, with Paul in Philippians 4. And remember, Paul went through a lot of dark places. But he says this, and look at it with me. He says, I am not saying this because I am in need or want, for I have learned to be content whatever the circumstances. I trust the shepherd. I know what it is to be in need. I've got my dark valleys. I've got my tough places to be. I've been in dry places. I know what it is to have plenty. I get the lush green places and when everything's going great. I have learned the secret of being content in every in any and every situation, whether well-fed, I like that as a sheep, or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. And then he says this, I can do all things through him who gives me strength. And wherever your path of life goes, remember God is ahead of you. And God is with you in the middle of it all. And his goodness and his mercy, they follow you all the days of your life. What kind of shepherd do you follow? One who sets tables in the midst of enemy territory? Don't let fear mislead you. Follow the great shepherd, because he's in front of you and he's with you and in the middle and he's behind you with his goodness and mercy. And because of Jesus, as it says, you will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Go in great confidence, knowing the great shepherd leads you, and follow him, knowing his power, his goodness, his mercy sustain you. Let's pray.